what I need.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Schooling Show. Live, we're on a little bit early today, our regular time. No football this weekend. Thanks for joining us here. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you haven't signed up for my free weekly newsletter, you are missing out. It has all of the ThinkLink content on it, and we want you to join. Sign up today. It's free. Did I mention that? It's completely free, and there's lots of great stuff there for you. Good tips every single week on being smarter with your money. 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open. Mortgage interest rates popped up about a quarter of a point this week. We'll talk about why. I really want to spend some time this morning, though, talking about saving money. I was in Dallas this past week for Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Dallas. They are a very similar organization to our own Credibility, and that used to be Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta, so they're the Dallas version. I went out there and I spent some time a day with Rosie Rios, who is the U.S. Treasurer. She's the one who signs the bills. Secretary Geithner is Secretary Cabinet level. She works for him, and she heads up Treasury, and we were at the Federal Reserve Bank in Dallas. Talking about money and talking about what's going on and trying to answer some questions for different industry leaders who had joined us for this breakfast. Then we went to do a town hall with my good friend Pamela Yip, who is one of the great personal finance writers in the country, and answered some more questions there. And it was really interesting to listen to the treasurer talk about how she wished that making home affordable actually worked a little bit better. It was not... you know, nobody, I think, in the federal government is pleased by the number of people who have been helped or not helped, but that was really interesting. We also talked about spending and credit and changes. And in the year 2013, not sure if you're aware of this, but in 2013, the federal government for Social Security payments is only going to be online. They're only going to do this thing called Go Direct, and you have to sign up. Make sure you put your bank accounts in there, and then you will get all of your money direct deposited, which is such a much better way to do it. So we talked about that as well. As you know, if you've listened to this show for a long time, you know that I love online banking. I think it's very safe. I think that there are tremendous numbers of opportunities there. For businesses, it's a great way to save money by pushing people online. Federal Reserve Bank is closing processing facilities, probably a good way to call it, where you write a check and it has to go somewhere and the Fed is actually monitoring that. So we talked a little bit about that as well. It's really interesting to just hear what's going on behind the scenes and how people at Treasury are working very, very hard in a lot of different areas to make sure that the economy, at least the cash in the economy, stays fluid. It's fascinating. 404-872-0750. But one of the things I talked about while I was away, and this is what I want to start with today, many of you know that I've done this speech. I did a speech earlier this year about 12 times called Everyday Money. And the thinking behind the speech is that it's the everyday money decisions that you make that are going to determine how much money you have at the end of your life. And so the last time we talked about this on the air, I got a great tip from somebody who said that they like to eat out, but they decided it was costing too much, so they went to a water-only policy for the adults as well as the kids. So no booze, no wine, no lemonade, no sodas, no milk at dinner, nothing. Everything just, you know, was water only. And we were talking about this idea of water only and how much they saved. And the person who called in, it was a woman, said that they were saving something in the order of $10,000 a year simply by not ordering beverages when they go out to eat. And that makes sense, because if you think about it, a glass of wine, depending on where you go, probably averages between $8 and $12 a glass, right? Fancy restaurants might be $15 to $20 a glass. And in cheap restaurants or less expensive restaurants, it might be maybe, I think the cheapest I've seen in forever is about $5 a glass, but it's typically around $8 to $10 a glass for wine. When you have two people getting a glass of wine, just one, it's maybe $20 and plus tax and tip. And if you get a mixed drink, it could be more than that. If you, the kids start getting lemonades, even when they have free refills, it's $2, $3, $4 a glass. So you can see that very quickly on a $60 or $80 dinner, beverages will account for about 25% of that, or about $20. And I thought that was really interesting. And I added that when giving examples on places, easy places that you could cut back, I started adding that. So that got me thinking this week about what we are really spending money on. And it was really interesting in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Well, it's their weekend edition, right? On the homepage, page one, spenders become savers, hurting recovery. And there's a long article by John Hilzenrath and Ruth Simon. Ruth does a lot of the real estate writing for the journal. And John does a lot of business writing, but this is sort of a something called the long haul, and they keep watching this. And so what this story is filled with are anecdotes about people who've decided that there are more important things in life than the latest and greatest newest purse, or eating out at the latest greatest restaurant, or seeing the movies. And what they're doing instead is they are plowing every single buck they have into wiping out credit card debt. Deleveraging. Banks call it deleveraging, right? They're wiping out credit card debt. They are paying down their mortgages early. They're working their way through their $50,000 in student loans. And as a result, this old-fashioned practice of delaying purchases until you actually have the cash to buy them, or what I like to call deferred gratification, they're practicing that instead of going out and willy-nilly borrowing up the wazoo to go buy all this stuff. And as a result, the total household debt through payment or default fell by $1.1 trillion, or about 8.6% from mid-2008 to the first half of 2011, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And auto loan and credit card balances in August have had their biggest drop since April of 2010. So banks have been deleveraging, which means basically shunting off the bad debt. And it looks like we have been deleveraging. In other words, saving more, spending less, paying down your debt. Deleveraging. For some people, that means that they have given up their homes and gone into foreclosure. That's a big part of this. No doubt. That is a big, big part of this. But a lot of people have just decided that it is more important to be free from debt than it is to live in a bigger house. And that effect on the economy is very similar to what happened in the aftermath of the Great Depression. Now, the Great Depression was in the 1930s, so people who lived through it would be like 110 today. So we don't have a lot of them around, but we certainly have people who are young kids and who are now in their 80s and 90s for the Great Depression, and the memories of that depression really haunt everybody today. Now, I remember my grandmother, who died at 97, I want to say like 5 to 8 years ago. I can hardly remember anymore. Time is passing so quickly. But she was a total Great Depression lady. She managed a dollar so it felt like $2. She was on top of every expense, very generous, gave to charity, would send us little checks, all through college so we could go out and have a good meal and all that kind of stuff. Never forgot a birthday. But when it came to spending, was very, very cautious and always paid attention to where the pennies go. Maybe it's no surprise that I do what I do for a living, because I watched my grandmother, and it was just one of her great lessons, how to manage through something like that. So this story is sort of interesting. There's a chart, if you've got a copy of the paper, there was a chart on page 14 that talked about consumer shrinking debt load. And as the value of our homes have shrunk, and it's shrunk dramatically, it hit about $23 trillion as the value of real estate-owned households, right? And now it's down to somewhere around $16 trillion. That's a really big drop. And we're kind of at the lower level. Like, it hasn't started to go up again. So as our home values have shrunk, we are much more reluctant, as it turns out, to use credit. And so the credit card accounts per capita have also shrunk. But we are better at keeping up with our bills. So, you know, most Americans, 96% up through the Great Recession, 96% were keeping up with their bills on time. That dropped all the way to 88% in 2009 into 2010. That's a huge drop. We went from 96% down to 88%. It's an 8% drop. And now we're back up to a little bit over 90%. So we are trying really hard to figure out what the new model is going to be. Slimming down the debt is really good for individuals. It's not so great for the economy. The economy, this American economy for the last decade or two has thrived on personal consumption excess. You spend it, you get it, you find a way to borrow it, and you acquire it. And that's what we've been living on. And the problem when you stop living that way is that the economy has to rebalance. And that's kind of what's going on. And nobody quite knows where it's going to end up. So, for example, Provident Credit Union, which didn't make any subprime loans during the housing boom and still had $3.3 million in profits during the first half of 2011, has the same problem that many other credit unions have, which is that its loan portfolio has shrunk by 25%. People are not borrowing. They're not borrowing on their existing lines of credit. They're not taking out new loans, and they are having to retool their business to try and find people who are willing to borrow. I mean, last year, according to the Wall Street Journal, Americans spent less on appliances, cars, car maintenance, dental services, jewelry and watches, recreational vehicles, tobacco, insurance, cameras, gambling, and air travel than when they did in 2005, even after adjusting for inflation. So that's 7 years. We've rolled it back 7 years. Our homes are worth about where they were in 1998 or 1999. So that's 13 years, and we're spending about where we were 7 years ago. And the households that are most in debt are the least likely, this makes total sense, to spend. So if you can't get credit, right, because remember we went through this period of time where the credit, our lines of credit were shrunk, where credit card companies were freaked out and they clamped down. If you had $20,000 of available credit, they might have cut that to $5,000, right? A little bit of overkill. And now we have people who are seeing the value of getting out from under all that debt. And so bonuses are going to pay down debt, pay down mortgages, pay down credit card debt, pay down school loans, get rid of your car loan, save up for the future. Save up for things that you want to buy or do to your house. It's going to fundamentally change how we operate in this country. And because it's taking so long for us to get back, this isn't like the stock market bounced back and now we're all good. It's taking a really long time. There are a lot of people unemployed in this country, and it's not getting any better. And so what you're seeing, I think, is the beginning of a new way of thinking about spending. And I would love to hear from you. I would love to know if this is exactly what you're seeing. So give us a call, 404-872-0750. Are you spending, and I've asked this before, but we're going to talk about it today a little bit, are you spending more or less or the same? 404-872-0750. More or less or the same? For myself, I would say our spending is virtually unchanged. I mean, for all these years, Sam has been tracking it on Quicken, and we track our business expenses on QuickBooks, and it has been, our spending has been completely unchanged. So interesting. But I want to know what your spending is like. So 404-872-0750. You can tweet me at @glink. We're going to take a short break while we start to answer some of these calls. We'll be right back with your spending tips on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. We're talking about money today and the idea that people might just be spending less, not for now, but for a long time to come. Kim joins us on the line. Kim, you spending more? Are you spending less? What's it look like?
Hey, Elise. We are definitely spending less. My husband is a builder, and I'm a stay-at-home mother, and we have two kids in private school, and we actually sold our home and are renting now just to be able to keep them in school, because obviously my husband being a builder, he's transitioned into remodeling, and things are, pretty sporadic.
Yeah, I'm hearing, though, that more people are choosing to do some remodeling, even if it's minor work, simply because they want to stay in their homes. Is your husband starting to build that? It takes a while to build a business anyway.
It does take a while. He's been doing it now for, going on 4 years since everything started, the downturn in the economy with real estate. But he is building a business, but our income is definitely cut by 75% from what we're used to before. So
wow.
We are definitely downsizing, and where I would used to go to the mall and buy an outfit or clothes for the kids, I now go to Goodwill and to some of the outlet stores and things like that.
Ooh, you're very fashionable, Kim, actually, which is exactly what this Wall Street Journal article is saying. People are finding different ways to go and spend that money. So you're spending less. Thank you for sharing. We are wondering... I'm wondering, are you spending more, are you spending less, and when is that going to end for you? 404-872-0750. We have a whole slate of calls. We're going to take them. Coming back next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for joining us today. We are talking about money, about spending it, or rather not spending it. There is a new study out from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that shows that our debt, our collective debt, has shrunk by $1.1 trillion since 2008. It is down about 8.6%. We are deleveraging. And we are spending less. And so the Wall Street Journal chronicled some people, anecdotally, of course, to try and figure that out. I wanted to know what you are doing and what you're thinking. So spending less, saving more, paying down your debt, 404-872-0750. Or you can tweet your response at Glink on Twitter. I'm at GLINK. Sarah joins us on the line from Alpharetta. So, Sarah, what about you?
Elise, first of all, you are right on the mark. People are spending less. Me and my family, we've been spending less for probably the last 5 years. We did undertake a pretty major renovation of our home. It took actually a year and a half longer than what we had planned.
Oh.
We have completed that. We're not underwater.
Okay.
We still have more value than what we have put into it. And so we are definitely spending less. We do not take extravagant vacations. We don't buy new clothes. And I can really say that across the board for all my friends and family. We're all in that same position.
Wow. Well, do you have people that are close to you who are unemployed and have been unemployed for a long time? Or did you guys just take an income hit?
No, we have not taken an income hit at all. We're in professions that really have not been too terribly affected. That's computer sciences and consulting.
Wow. And yet you still are finding that you're spending less, and you've been spending less.
Yes, we have been spending less. That's right. We are more acutely aware of, I think it's really being aware of the economic situation in the United States and knowing that we all have to do our part to be a little bit more thrifty and to plan for the future. And we, intend to maintain this level of spending well into the past the point, I think, where the government or the officials may believe that the recovery is complete. I think we're going to keep this sort of habit, if you will, into the future.
So interesting. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate your comments this morning. 38 minutes past the hour. Are you spending more or are you spending less? Kind of wondering where everybody is today. 404-872-0750. Jane joins us on the line from Buford. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So you spending more or spending less?
We're spending less because we want to spend more next year.
Ah, why do you want to spend more next year?
Well, we're in credit card debt, and we're hoping to have it paid off by the end of this year, but interest is sort of preventing that.
Uh-huh.
And a twist to the story is I just inherited an annuity when my grandma passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't quite sure if you thought maybe if I got a lump sum from the annuity to pay off the credit card, if that would be a good idea, or if I should roll that into an IRA.
You know, that's actually sort of interesting. So what's the interest rate you're paying on your debt?
It's like 21%. It's astronomical.
And do you have any hope anywhere that that annuity will pay you 21%?
Yeah, I think that it will.
Really?
I'm just afraid of the tax I would have to pay if I took all the annuity out now.
Well, I can tell you for sure that the annuity is not returning 21%. I don't know what kind of annuity you had, but if you had one that returned that, I think everybody would be right. There'd be a sort of a crush to get there and get in line.
Right.
You know, most savings is earning about 1% if you're lucky.
Okay.
And you're paying out 21%. So even if you were earning 10% on your money, you would still be losing money compared to paying this off. So I would take, how much debt do you have?
It's about $3,000.
And how much is the annuity?
It's about $13,000.
Okay. I think you should take out $5,000 of the annuity, which should be enough to pay the taxes on it, and get rid of your debt. Now that money from your grandmother has just earned you a net effect of about 21%.
Oh, great. Okay.
And now you don't have that anymore. But I want you to honor your grandmother's memory by taking the money that you were spending every month, and I want you to open up something called a Roth IRA.
Okay.
This is after-tax money. So how much were you spending every month on the debt?
About $1,000.
It's a lot of money.
Yep.
So you can put away $5,000 into a Roth IRA and invest it any way you want. And what I'd like you to do is take the first $5,000 after you've paid this off, and I want you to put it into the Roth IRA. And and every year I want you to do that, and that is how you're going to honor your grandmother's memory. You'll remember her every time you write that check because, ta-da, you don't have to pay it to a credit card company.
Oh, I love it.
So that's what I want you to do. And so, and at some point in time, you're going to look back and go, wow, that was a really smart thing. I also want you to build up your emergency fund.
Okay.
And you should be able to do that because once you get the $5,000 into the Roth IRA, you'll have $7,000 left in your first year of not paying down that debt.
Yeah.
And I think that it's going to make a huge amount of sense for you. So that's my prescription for you. And it sounds like at some point in time in your life, you're going to be able to spend more. And what do you want to buy next year?
We definitely want to work on our house. Got an older house, and we want to put in new floors and do some painting and some upgrades. So,
well, I want
that's
you to
the plan.
That's a good plan. I just want you to start saving for it now because, like these people who are quoted in the Wall Street Journal, you always want to have cash on hand for that kind of thing, unless it's really huge. But for the little things, replacing some carpet, putting in some new floors, that's the kind of stuff I'd really love to see you actually pay for on a cash basis. 42 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Jane, thank you so much for your call. Rosalind joins us on the line. Hey, Rosalind, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Are you spending more or are you spending less?
I am spending about the same.
Spending about the same. Yes. All right. And has your financial situation changed?
No, not really.
Okay.
But anything could happen.
All right. Well, I see you're calling from Detroit. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So how are things going up in the state of Michigan?
Well, not too good. You know, a lot of people are in foreclosure and losing their homes and so forth.
Yep, it's a real problem. Absolutely. What can I do for you today?
My question is, I have a 30-year fixed mortgage and it's 6%, and it's underwater, of course. And I was wondering, is there any way to refinance without paying points or anything, just to refinance to maybe a 15-year mortgage?
Do you have an FHA loan?
No, I don't. It's a conventional.
Unfortunately, it's going to be tough. You can try one of the Making Home Affordable refinances, but you may not qualify. There's supposed to be a new program coming out for people who are underwater. I think what I would do is not do anything right now. I would just wait and see. Because I think that you may qualify for a new program the government's kind of futzing over right now.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. It's 44 minutes past the hour. Are you spending more? Are you spending less? Or are you like Rosalind, spending about the same? 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Sylvia joins us on the line from Jonesboro. Hi, Sylvia.
Hey, Elise. It's good talking to you.
Nice to have you on the air today.
Well, listen, we returned recently from the Middle East, and we have a home in Georgia. We've mm-hmm. paid off our mortgage, okay? We paid off our daughter's student loan. We actually, my husband is working in North Carolina, so we are in that, you know, two-state type thing situation.
Yeah.
And we're actually looking to purchase possibly a place in South Carolina since there are a lot of pluses for retirees, and we're almost there.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I really would like to know, since we don't owe anybody anything except for our utilities, and I think it might be advisable for us to possibly help one of our children. We have two, and help them in purchasing a home.
Okay.
Do you see that as a good deal?
Well, I don't know what you mean by deal. If they need the help and you can provide that help and you think that's...
Are you
talking about co-investing with them? What are you actually talking about?
Quite possibly. I'm very fearful of the home situation, you know, ownership. And I would prefer that we own the home that one of our kids might be interested in, either in the D.C. area or in Georgia. But the thing is, we're in that situation where we can possibly loan them the money. So what do you think? And in that way, if anything happens to their jobs, you know, we would still own the home. Is this a good deal?
Well, so let's talk about if it's a good deal for you. It sounds like a very good deal for your children.
Yes.
But is it a good deal for you? And the answer is, if you're going to take $100,000 out of savings and mm-hmm. where it's probably earning about 1%, and you're going to buy real estate with it, and the real estate is going to, the loan will generate, let's say you give them 4.5% for a 30-year, mm-hmm. which is about, you know, maybe what they'd get, maybe a little bit lower, 4.25%. That's still a whole lot more than 1%.
Yes.
The difference is if interest rates go up and you could be getting 8%, you're still getting 4%. On the plus side, you're still helping a child, which is good, and there's some underlying value to the home. But in this kind of a situation, you wouldn't actually own the home. They do. You own the loan. You have the paper, the underlying paper. So if something happened to it, you would still have that. It's bringing in 4%. It becomes annuitized for you. Because
mm-hmm.
it's unlikely they're going to stop making payments unless they absolutely can't. And so what you've done is you've given yourself a stream of income. So I like that idea a lot, especially if your child is a great kid and, you know, is responsible and they're not going to go and... I've heard stories, not about your kid, but I've heard stories. And I share them on the air all the time. So, but I want to make sure that you're protected. So you have to have a real estate lawyer drop the papers. You've got to get it filed and all the rest. Now, if you want to help your child build his or her credit, you can sign up with the three credit reporting bureaus, and you can report their on-time payments so that their credit is getting a boost with this loan.
Yeah, well, they don't have a problem with the credit department. They have excellent. In fact, they have better credit than we have because we've been out of the country for 7.5 years.
Well, maybe they should report you to the credit reporting bureaus.
No, quite possibly. But this is something that, you know, we have excess money, and I don't want to just let it sit there.
I like the idea of putting it to work, Sylvia, and I think that this is a great way to help yourself because you're building up your cash flow situation. It's always nice to have a little extra cash, even if you decide to save it and, you know, or do something for your grandchildren if you have any, or will have some someday. And it's nice for your children as well. So I think that part of it is a very good deal. What I wouldn't want to see is you buy the house and then they pay you rent.
Right.
I would much rather see them buy the house and you just act as the paper behind it because there's just so much going on there. But so that, you know, those are the things to think about. But I think it's a great idea. Just hire an attorney and make sure that you are getting the proper amount of coverage and warranties for you and your husband. 404-872-0750. Spending more, you spending less. Randall, welcome to the program. What about you?
Hi, Elise. It's a pleasure speaking to you. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Nice to have you. Welcome.
I love listening to your program on these beautiful Sunday mornings, kind of end my day with a quick note.
Terrific.
I have a question. Let me see. I managed to save a lot more, even though I'm making a lot more than previous jobs I've had. I'm a contractor. I'm able to save at least minimum of 75% of my weekly pay.
Wow.
But the problem I'm having, Elise, is I kind of got my, I have my money scattered everywhere. And what I mean by everywhere, I have a credit union, I have a Roth, I have a mutual, and I have a couple mega banks accounts. However, I need to build that nest egg. I got too many cards in my wallet, and I just want one. What's the best route, I should say?
Well, you know, I have a lot of cards in my wallet, too, and I don't actually have a problem with having those, but it sounds like you need some consolidation of your accounts.
Absolutely.
You don't need accounts everywhere. It's, as you now know, it is really hard to keep track of them all. So
Exactly.
So what's the best place? Do you like the credit union with the technology they have? Do you like the big banks? Where do you find you're getting the best deal and the best customer service?
Actually, I do more banking on my, I have an online bank. I don't know if I can name the name, but I do more business with the online bank and credit union than the major mega bank.
Okay, then what I think you ought to do is consolidate into the credit union, because it's really nice to have a branch that you can walk into.
Okay.
And keep the online bank for all the online stuff that you're doing. And just start with consolidating to those two. That's going to be a lot of work, because if you have other kinds of checking accounts and you have direct deposits tied to it somehow, or, you know, auto debit, you're going to need to transfer all of those into the credit union account, and that's going to take some time. So the goal is to get everything consolidated into these two places, and then if you've got, say, you know, you've got all, you know, money in about six dozen financial institutions like Fidelity and Charles Schwab and Vanguard, pick one and do the same thing. Trustee to trustee transfers if you need to do that, or just closing accounts and opening up new accounts or transferring over accounts. What you want to do is get everything into one or two locations so you know exactly where all of your money is at any point in time. Randall, thanks so much for your call. And I'm so excited to hear somebody saving 75% of their income. Good for you. We've got news, weather, and traffic coming up in just a couple of minutes. In today's AJC, there's a report on the Atlanta Public School records to reveal cover-ups beyond cheating on standardized tests. It's been a really crazy, that whole standardized test thing, very disturbing. It is 9 before the hour, AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays. Today we're on 11 to 1. Next week we're back. Football's back. We're on 12 to 2. We are talking about spending and saving and what that means for you, whether you're spending more, spending less, about the same. I'd shared that I'm actually spending about the same at the moment, but we are saving much more. I mean, we've had a good year, and so I am not increasing the amount of money I'm spending just because my income has gone up a little bit. We're very sensitive to the fact that income is variable. And wondering how you're doing. 404-872-0750. Call it the Great Spending Check-In. 3 years into what should have been the recovery. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back for a whole nother hour next on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show. It is 6 minutes past the hour, lunchtime Sunday, or maybe you've had brunch, so you're not that hungry, or maybe you're driving home from church. Glad you could join us here today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. My website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out my Money Watch blog. We've been doing celebrity purchases and sales all week. Tomorrow, Frances Bean Cobain, daughter of Kurt Cobain, is we're talking about her house that she is selling, or that she just bought, excuse me. Tom Brady, on the other hand, is selling his Boston condo. So we've got all kinds of really fun stuff that way. We also, on the Equifax Finance blog, have all kinds of information out. You want to check that out at equifax.com. Just click on the blog. There's a link right at the top. And make sure you take a look at it. I want to spend just a moment. We've been talking about spending less and saving more. And we've talked a little bit about this new study from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that shows how we have deleveraged about $1.1 trillion in debt since 2008. And that's about 8.6%. That is a huge, huge number. Anytime you start talking about trillion with a T as opposed to, you know, B, billion, or M, million, what you start to see is a real exponential impact on the economy. But for a lot of people, the deleveraging has come at a tremendous price, and that price is a foreclosure and their home. And one of the things that we've seen is that when people have credit that has been so trashed, or they don't even have credit, right? You're young, you're 18, you're 22, you don't even have any credit, or you've never had a credit card, you've never participated in the debt economy, and now you want to, that it has become increasingly difficult for people to even get subprime cards. And so I've started working with a company called eCredable, eCredable. I'll put it up on the blog today. And this is a company that monitors alternative credit. This, you sign up and you start to put in things like your rent payments or your insurance payments. A lot of people are paying insurance, auto insurance, at Western Union type places, or they're paying it at their bank, or somehow they're paying it on the quarterly basis. Or you've got, a car that you had to buy with very high interest rate because you basically have no credit. You can't get any kind of credit. Credit cards are out of reach. And so this company specializes in helping you collect alternative credit, the payment to the utilities, the payment to your cell phone bill, the payments to the rental agent, the leasing office, whatever it is. What's interesting about this is that the government has changed its laws, and a couple of years ago it required big lenders to start recognizing alternative forms of credit. And I feel very strongly, this is why I've joined the company to help promote this, I feel very strongly that everybody deserves a chance to have credit, right? If it's not about being bailed out, it's not about getting something for nothing, it's really just about being able to prove that you are credit worthy, even if you don't have a credit card that's loaded with debt. It's just that simple. And I think we all have to get behind this new model for proving credit worthiness. And I'm going to keep talking about this. The company is called eCredable. You can go to their website, find out more information. I sit on an advisory board for them. I help create content for the site. My picture's up on the site. You know, it's just an important tool that you're going to need going forward as we rebuild what we're doing here in this country, rebuilding our own personal credit. We're stepping out and stepping up. I'm a big fan. Dave Ramsey has signed up to be, is endorsing this product. He loves eCredable, thinks it's really, really important. I think that's great. In the Hispanic world, Julie Stav has become a good friend. She is behind eCredable. So all of us are here trying to really step forward and connect the dots for people. Check it out. You may have credit and you may be in great shape, but you may know somebody who's been hit hard by this recession, or have a child who's just coming into their own and they don't have any credit. this might be a place to start. I just feel very strongly we have to have a new model in this country for credit. And to go to, there's 50 million Americans who don't have credit histories. It's just where those people need a way to prove that they are as creditworthy as anybody else. So for now, my answer is incredible. Take a look, check it out, let me know what you think. 404-872-0750. We started the show an hour ago talking about, are you spending more or are you spending less, and what that means for the economy going forward. And it's kind of interesting when you think about it that we have spent so much time and effort in this country and so much money, crazy money, buying things, planning for our purchases, going out and getting debt, taking on debt so that we could buy these things today instead of working on it with what I call deferred gratification. That just means waiting till you have the cash saved up in order to be able to do it. When you have cash saved up and you take a step and you try to do these things, it feels so good. I remember when my sister got married like 15 years ago, and I said to my mom, what are you doing? It was the end of the night. She said, I'm writing the check. And I said that, and it was a very lovely wedding. And I said, how do you feel about that? It's a pretty big check. And she said, I feel amazing about it. I have all this money in the bank. I'm just going to write the check. They're going to cash it, and I'm done. And so when you have the ability to pay cash for things, when you have saved up and made that a priority, writing the check is not a problem. I mean, yeah, you wish you had the money in the bank still, but it feels so good to be able to pay cash for something. It's just really, really important. And there, I think Dave Ramsey gets it exactly right. I mean, there are very few people who didn't go out on a limb over the last 10 years at some point in time, buy a car on credit, maybe you financed your renovation on credit, whatever it was. People are getting the amount of school loans. The debt has just soared. So there's definitely a lot of credit issues going on right now. And we have to think about where we are in that spectrum of spending and saving and making smart choices. 404-872-0750. David joins us on the line for Marietta. So, David, are you spending more or are you spending less or about the same?
I'm spending less. But because it's not that I'm spending less for the same things.
Okay.
I simply got upset about spending so much money and seeing how people are saving money.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through every utility I had, every bill I had, and called every single company that I work with. I called the garbage company. I called my DSL provider. I called the cable company. I called the gas company. And I said, I have other options out there, guys. I would love to stay with you, but I have other choices. What can you do for me? And in every single case, they reduced my bill because they're afraid of losing customers.
Sure.
To more and more competitors. So my trash bill went down by 70%.
Wow.
My DSL bill was cut by 50%. My cell bill was cut down by 40%. My electricity was cut by 20%.
How much money do you think you're saving from doing that? Because that's exactly when I talk about everyday money, this is exactly what I'm talking about. How much do you think you're saving per month now that you've changed all these things?
Oh gosh, at least $120 to $130 a month.
Wow.
Just by asking.
Mm-hmm.
Not threatening, not you know, saying I'm gonna switch services, but saying there are better deals out there, and you know, if you can help me out, I won't switch. If you're not going to negotiate with me, I might switch. And it wasn't a threat. It was a, can you help me out? Because I'm not making as much as I was 5 years ago.
I think that's amazing. Well, you're saving a really significant amount of money. I mean, you're almost saving $2,000 a year.
Yes.
For exactly the same thing. That's got to feel pretty great.
It's wonderful. A lot of these deals are, you know, 6 months will give you a deal for 6 months. I call back 6 months later and say, you know, great, 6 months is up, but those deals are still out there that I can switch from. Will you extend us another 6 months? And they say yes. Same with a credit card company. Credit card companies will offer you you know, a 0% loan, but they're going to charge you 4% in credit card fees just to write a 0% loan, I'll call them and ask and say, can you cut me a deal? And instead of charging me $400, charge me $50. I'm a good customer. I've used your credit card for several years. And they go, sure, we'll do that for you.
So you've learned that to ask the right question in the right way, which is really important.
Ask it politely, and I found that the greatest negotiating technique is simply to ask.
You know, it's funny. We did exactly the same thing when we were renovating our house and realized that our contractor had gone way over his head and was about to go into bankruptcy. We knew before he was that he was in big trouble. And we did. We went to every single... We became the GCs of the construction. We went to every single supplier, and we said, this is what's happened. Can you help us? And they all said yes. To your point, I mean, it's an amazing way to do it. And you shared a great lesson with everybody today. So thank you very much for doing that. Have a great Sunday. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Winston joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Winston.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Are you spending more? Are you spending less? Spending about the same?
I think I'm spending a little less. I was able to purchase a house for cash earlier this year. So I'm not paying any rent per se. So I think I am spending a lot less.
Fantastic. Good for you.
My question is, I'd like to know if it's a good idea in this economy to take out the equity in my house and buy another one and invest as an investment property.
You know, yes and no. Yes, it could be a good idea if you bought the right house at the right price and you wanted to be a landlord and you were good at being a landlord. It's a terrible idea if you do it and you overpay and you are forced to refinance into a higher interest rate on your primary residence, which you're putting at risk, and you buy a house that nobody is going to buy or
right.
live in and rent from you, now you're carrying two properties. So
right.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm afraid of, that if I buy it, it may not be. Well, I'm looking at condos. I bought a condo, so I would be buying condos. You can get really good quality condos for, you know, decent prices. So I was thinking of buying something really looking good that is rentable. So that was my... thinking.
So buying a condo that's rentable is a nice idea, but the problem is that a lot of condo buildings have too many rentals in them, and that makes it buyers are unable to finance anything.
Right.
And so you might be able to buy a condo with the idea of renting, only to find that they won't let you rent it.
Yes.
And then you won't be able to sell it. And sometimes those decisions on whether or not you can rent are made retroactively or after you've purchased the property. So
right.
you have to be really careful. I would feel more comfortable about you buying a single-family property than buying a condo rental. Simply
right.
because I think the rules of those buildings keep changing. I don't think it's dependable. Anything can happen. It makes me very nervous, especially in some of the buildings in Atlanta. Like if you were thinking about the Midtown area, you know, some of the buildings that are there that are virtually all rentals.
Right. One quick question. I want to start a Roth. What's the minimum amount you can start a Roth IRA with?
The minimum amount, it depends, but usually it's somewhere between $750 and $1,000.
Okay.
But what's kind of nice about that is if there are some investment companies out there that if you guarantee to do $25 a month, they might let you start for even less. But it's definitely worth calling, picking the phone up, calling Fidelity or Vanguard and some of the other companies. They have great options, and you'll be able to get, I think, a pretty good deal there as well. 20 minutes past the hour, we have a prize pack to give away. We're going to do that next. Stay tuned for more of the Lee Sklink Show on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glake on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour. We have WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The prize value, $235. Here's the big item. A pair of tickets to see Paul Simon in concert on December 2nd at the arena at Gwinnett Center, produced by Live Nation. Paul Simon, awesome. It also includes a Kroger $50 gift card and free, this may be the best part of it all, free Blue Bell ice cream for 1 year. I have no idea how much ice cream you actually get for that, but boy, does that sound really delicious. We're going to give that amazing prize pack away to the fifth caller. The line number 404-741-0750. 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He is going to take your call. All right, let's do a quick call. We have Linda joining us on the line from Marietta. Hey, Linda.
Hey there.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm getting a divorce. I am down to the wire of having to sign a paper tomorrow or go to jury court, and I'm getting pushed in a lot of different ways, but my question is, one of the things in the settlement agreement says that my husband makes an excess of $500,000 a year, and I help start and run that business.
Mm-hmm.
It says in the agreement that that I will get paid half of what he gets net after he pays his office expenses and a myriad of other expenses. I, having run the business, thought those things came out of the gross, and if he makes $500,000, he takes a $300,000 salary or a little more and then has to pay all these expenses. What happens to the rest of that money?
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of ways to hide money. Do you have legal representation?
I do have a lawyer and I do have a CPA, and they're good, except, you know, they're pushed, they're overworked, they're underpaid probably, and they waited it till the last minute. Plus the judge pulled this business of immediate mediation, and if no mediation, we go to court immediately. So, we're sort of in a corner.
All right, Linda, we're going to take a quick break. We have to go to news, weather, and traffic. Stay with us. I've got some suggestions for you, and I want to take a little bit more time, so I don't want to give you a short answer. So just hang on. We'll be back. I'm Elise Glenk. You're listening to The Elise Glenk Show on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
And 36 minutes past the hour on The Elise Glenk Show. Thanks for joining us today. The winner of the prize pack was Jim from Marietta. Congratulations on getting those Paul Simon tickets. That's pretty awesome. 404-872-0750. We were on the phone just now with Linda. Linda is getting a divorce from her husband, and she has to make a decision tomorrow about how to and what to take in terms of profits. So, Linda, you...
I might also add that I've been married 40 years.
40 or 4?
40.
40 years.
And I started and ran his business that he now makes a lot of money from for 15 years. I started it from the bones up.
Wow.
And I'm not trying to be greedy, I was married more than half of my life. And I went yesterday to open a credit card account at Best Buy to get a new computer because mine's died and I couldn't even get a computer. Couldn't get an account there, and I think how could I ever expect to finance a home or get out of, get to a place of my own?
So you've never had your own credit that you built up?
I worked for a while when he was in school and then raised children. You know, I got caught. I said
but
I
you
never
don't
get
have
caught
joint
that,
credit card accounts?
We were cold. We had to get rid of those.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and Sam, I don't know if this advice I'm getting is really good advice, really bad advice, medium of the road advice. These people I think are sincere, but they're very, let's push you on and go on to the next person kind of thing.
Well, I don't think you're getting good advice particularly, because what you should have done is, instead of canceling your joint accounts, was to call the credit card companies and ask to have separate...
I didn't cancel them. He did.
Well, then they weren't really joint accounts, because they shouldn't have been able to cancel them if you were both...
I had
both
joint checking accounts, and he went in and canceled them.
Nice.
I know. I was told it wasn't legal to do it, but the bank did it anyway.
You know, I'm not sure what your lawyer is doing here, but it sounds like you're being... and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to give you legal advice. But I'm just saying it sounds like this has all come down to the wire. And
I'm getting hustled a little bit.
I feel like you are getting hustled. I mean, instead of just getting half his salary, and by the way, the business expenses should come off the gross. Your half should be the net.
And he wants me to sign over. He wants me to sign over a quit claim to any claims to the business, and he wants.
No. The answer is no. Not until you get an agreement that you're satisfied with. And if that means going to trial, you'll go to trial. The other thing is that you're supposed to get, you should get, you're entitled to some sort of piece of his retirement account. So his 401k, whatever that is, you should be negotiating for a big chunk of that.
Well, he just started a 401k. We got caught in that crunch of, we didn't have any money put back for retirement, but we had a lake house, and we thought, well, that would be our retirement. And now everything's underwater, and we're going to sell the houses as is, sell them for what they're worth, try to get rid of them. But I want him to refinance the houses and get my name off the mortgage so I can go on.
Mm-hmm. But and he won't be able to do that if they're underwater.
Well, we've already been offered one refinance for one of them.
Okay.
So I think that's more of a possibility than some of this other stuff.
I think there's a lot of details here, and it doesn't sound to me like you have the very best financial advice. So I don't know who you're using.
When someone says to me, you don't need a $350,000 house, or you don't need a three-bedroom house, you can live in a one-bedroom, I just think, don't tell me what I need or what I want or what I should have.
Amen to that. He is no business telling you that.
You should be listening to what I want out of this, not what you think I should be getting.
I think that's right, and I don't understand why your advisors, legal and financial and CPA, are not standing behind you. Have they done a thorough investigation of the finances of the building?
Nope.
And of his company?
Nope.
Well, why would
they've looked at his? They've looked at his P&L sheets from his.
Have they looked at the tax return?
They've looked at the tax returns. Yeah.
From the business.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the P&Ls. From the computers that generate off the computers in the office, but I set up those computers. I know that can be jury-rigged. You can put anything down, you know.
I think you have to have the right to audit the books at your expense every year for the next five years.
I do have that written in.
And I think you have to get half the salary. I think the expenses have to come off the gross of the business. I think there has to be a minimum guarantee, regardless of what he earns. I think you should be getting half of his savings that you have. I mean, I think all of that stuff has to be split.
Well, he cashed out last year. He cashed out all our investments and paid off our bills, so we don't have any bills.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but he's
good.
Got a little bit of money put back, and I've asked for that to be frozen until this could be settled, because I don't trust him not to spend it.
Right.
And I have good reason not to trust him.
I'm sure. I just think that you're being pushed into something, and you don't really have a solid deal yet. And I think you have to go before the judge, and if it says, Judge, I'm sorry, we don't have a solid deal, I don't think he's being honest or fair about this company and about
the judge has said, you don't have a fine mediation on my... See, his lawyer went to the judge after we went through mediation and said, hey, we've got it all set, straightened out, mediation, we've got everything mediated, we're set, we're good. And she said, if you don't have something signed on my desk by Monday morning, we're going to trial. And it's a jury trial. And he's not going to want a jury trial because this stuff's going to come out. He's not going to want to come out.
That's fine. So why would you capitulate?
And everybody says I'm going to get a lot less because this judge is really hard-nosed, and I'm not going to get as much if I do this.
Who says that?
My lawyer does.
Well, I think your lawyer has to go to the judge and say, I'm sorry, we're not ready, and if you want to go to trial. You can always settle before the trial is finished. You know, you don't have to go all the way through.
You can?
Yeah. Just because you choose a trial doesn't mean you can't come in on the first day of trial and say, Judge, we've reached a settlement. We'd like you to approve it.
See, no one's even said that to me.
Well,
they've said we either mediate or we go to trial.
You can go to trial, but trials can end when they end.
Yeah, but no one said that. No one said, hey, if you start it, it's been presented. If you start a trial, you've got to, you know, that's it. No more mediation.
Well, it changes. Mediation goes away, but then you get to settlement negotiations. Like, there's other names for it. And I'm, you know, I'm just not sure of any requirement. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't know that there's a requirement that you have to get all the way through a trial. I think the lawyers can keep talking and trying to work this out. Every day of a trial that doesn't happen saves the taxpayers money. So it's not like judges are like, nope, we want to see it all the way through.
Yeah, and one of the things is, we named his business. His business was named in the mediation, and my lawyer came up and said, I think it should say any job he has.
Yeah.
For the next 7 years, you get half of it, and that's what the terms were. And he squawked at that and said, you know, then she doesn't get a say in when I sell the business. And I said, no.
I don't know why you don't own a piece of this business since you helped start it. I don't know why you would, you know.
Well, because it's an S corp, and it's done by shares and that kind of stuff. So it's,
okay.
At least what I've been told.
Linda?
With an S, yeah.
Linda, I think that you don't sign anything tomorrow. You called my show for advice. I'm just telling you, I think it sounds like you're being railroaded, and that's probably why you called me today. You don't like the answers you're getting from the people that you hired, and I don't think you should be listening to them without being confident in their advice.
Yeah.
And you have to have the guts.
Well, you're right. I wouldn't be calling if I wasn't sure.
Right. I mean, why did you pick up the phone today? Because you thought, I got to talk to somebody outside of this and get some feedback. My feedback is, it sounds like you don't like the advice you're getting and that your gut is telling you to ask more questions and stand up for what you really feel like you deserve, and nobody is supporting that. So you got to find some people who support that.
And they're kind of wanting to get this done and move on.
Well, too bad for them. This is your life.
Yep.
This is you and your life and 40 years of your life. So to hell with them. Okay? Sorry. Sunday morning. Probably shouldn't use that word.
No, I appreciate the sincerity of it.
I feel for you and your situation and the time that you've put in, and it shouldn't just come to a conclusion because somebody has a golf game.
Well, and there's a lot of manipulation on his part, too.
You need tougher attorneys. You need somebody you can trust who's going to not take that and is going to see through it and is going to make you feel like you've got the power, because it sounds to me like you feel like you've given it all away. And you know what? You worked too hard. So
I did.
So you got to find it within yourself to stand up tomorrow and just say, I'm not signing anything. And that's a hard thing to do. I appreciate that you might be standing up to everybody and saying no. But you're going to have to find it within yourself, because I really feel that if you capitulate and you sign, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. Maybe
everybody's saying, you don't want to go before this judge. She'll crucify you. Yeah.
Why? What did you do that was so horrible that you would be crucified?
Well, she's just a real hard
person. Okay, well, why won't she be that way to him? Why would she just hate you?
Well, I think when she hears a lot of the facts, she might be.
Well, the point is that it may not even come to that, and certainly in a jury situation and in a trial, you never know what's going to happen. But
right.
I don't feel like you should allow yourself to be railroaded. I just don't think that's a good thing. And it may be that you go through the next 2 months and you get to the exact same place and you do sign, and there's nothing else that's there. But at least you're signing with good conscience.
Yeah.
I just feel like you don't like where you are.
I was up all night. I have too many bells and whistles going off in my head.
Well, then you should listen to your gut. I find that when my gut is yelling and screaming at me and I can't sleep at night, then I better sit up and pay attention.
Well, I appreciate the advice.
All right. Let me know what happens.
I will. Thank you.
Stay in touch. 47 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with some calls. Mary joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Elise. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing fine. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. My question is, my sister lives in my rental property, which is fine, and I'm trying to refinance, but because it's an investment property, I'm having a problem getting a good rate. So what we talked about is probably switching properties, and my question is, what's the time frame I have to be over there to say that it's my property in order, it'll be my primary residence, in order for me to refinance then?
I think the minute you actually make the switch, and you change your voting registration and you change your driver's license and all, you've proven that that's your primary residence, so you can go do it.
Oh, okay, so there's no time frame I have to actually be
I don't
down.
Believe so. You just have to say, this is, you know, for at least the next foreseeable future, this is going to be my primary residence.
Uh-huh. Is it a time frame I have to live over there?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, usually it's at least a year.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that anybody would ever go back and check as long as the mortgage is being paid.
Right.
But you know, when you sign your loan documents, what you're basically saying is, for the foreseeable future, this is my primary residence.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Good luck with that plan. 48 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Let's squeeze in one more call. Deanna joins us on the line from Augusta. Hi, Deanna.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine. Good. This is the first time I've listened to your show.
Oh, well, welcome, and I hope you'll stick around.
Thanks. I probably have a multi-part question, but basically we were thinking about using my husband's inheritance to invest in buying a house and upgrading a house from basically about a $200,000 house to like a $300,000 house. For two reasons. One, I run my business out of my home. Mm-hmm. And secondly, possibly for expanding a family, too, just to have more space. And because interest rates are low and the housing market, the prices are low. So I thought this would be a great opportunity. But I'm a little bit nervous about putting 20% down, which is a big, you know, at least $60,000 or more, and all the costs associated with moving and mortgage, or just investing it and just being content where we are.
Well, you know, here's the thing about moving into a house and doing future planning. You never know what way those plans are going to go. So I can tell you that eventually housing prices will probably start to inch up, though not anytime soon. Interest rates will definitely start to inch up, but probably not anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are nervous about making this big move, then, again, I'm going to say what I said to Linda. You should probably be listening to your gut. Because...
Yeah.
You know, you may not have a family. You may decide to not do your business. You may decide your business needs its own place and move out of the house. And there are lots of things. It's very hard to predict the future.
Yeah.
Nobody really does a very good job of it. And so, you know, it is a big chunk of money. It's 60 grand is 20% down. Housing prices have been falling, so I'd like you to make an investment in a long-term community. I'd really rather see you buy in a great neighborhood with a great school district if you're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm already in a good neighborhood with a, it's just, it'd be the same school district. It would just be like a bigger house, more space and more just upgrades, I guess, because.
Well, can you add on to your house? Can you spend $50,000 and add on to your current house? Because then you'll be $70,000 ahead.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't considered that. Everything in our house needs to be upgraded. Everything's original.
Yeah.
Probably on the brink of, like, the kitchen. It probably needs an overhaul.
Hello, I just replaced my kitchen sink, faucet, and disposal the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. Why don't you price... You need more time to think about this. So why don't you start pricing it out? What I always do is I make big, long lists, and I say, this is what the cost is of moving, and I write down all the expenses. And this is the cost of running a bigger house, by the way. And then this is the cost of what I would have to do to upgrade this house, maybe add on another room, what is the room we need, and what we would do about it. And, this is what I love, this is what I know. And what would the house be worth after we're done with all of that, and what do the other houses on the block look like? And so you really need to do kind of a big chart, graph, picture graph. You can go on PowerPoint, do it that way, whatever. But you want to really understand what the costs are of moving and the benefits of moving and what are the costs of staying but upgrading. And that's where you're going to find where do you build in value, the most value, and how do you do it. I'm Elise Klink, 404-872-0750. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Klink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Seven minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. This week, on Friday, the U.S. Senate adopted a measure that would raise the maximum size of a home loan backed by mortgage companies Fannie and Freddie and the FHA to $729,750. Now, if that number sounds familiar, that measure was approved less than a month after the limit on so-called conforming loans was automatically reduced back to $625,500. Robert Menendez, who's a New Jersey Democrat, said that if we want to get the economy moving, the housing market has to be a part of it. But it's sort of interesting. I mean, the Senate adopted it 60-31, but what's interesting about this is that the economy is really not turning on whether people are getting a loan at $729,750. It's just not happening. The only place that this really matters, and for a tiny amount of people, number of people, is in San Francisco, maybe New York City, and a couple of 10 other markets across the country. But it doesn't include Atlanta or Chicago or anywhere else. And so they basically have caved to the National Association of Realtors, and I think it was perhaps a mistake. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. The music means our time is up. I'm so sorry about that, but I hope you have a great week. I'm going to be in San Francisco all week, so if you're there, wave. I'm going to be by the, where am I going to be? I don't know. All over, meeting with people, but I'll be back here next Sunday morning at noon because we've got football on News Talk WSB. Have a great week, everybody.
Money, nothing like the money.